Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. It's March 13th, 2023, to be rebroadcast on March 15th at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. If you're watching this on Facebook Live, feel free to comment down below. And if not, you can send us an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here. Or you can just drop me that email. We are recording our shows now on Monday and then having them play on Wednesday at WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or FMRadioFree.com. Ron's rant of the week. So I was going to save this for the future rant, but I just couldn't resist because it's just too much fun. You know how when you're out riding your bicycle on the road and you get the impatient driver behind you?
Never experienced that one, right?
Well, here we go. I just couldn't resist. This is too much fun. A driver can sit in a busy drive-thru for 20 minutes but can't wait 4 seconds for someone to cross the street. This was someone who was a pedestrian. One day, I hope pedestrians are as respected as Big Macs. The average drive-through, just so because I read that and went, well, okay, that's funny. Yeah, okay, let's see what it really is. The average drive-through for a wait line for wait line time is about 4 minutes and 50 seconds. Okay? Which is about 30 seconds less than the average wait time was in 2019. However, according to a recent study, the fastest average drive-through wait time was completed by 4 minutes and 50 seconds. Isn't that amazing? 4 minutes and 50 seconds. So the next time you have, maybe you're listening to this and you're not a bicycle rider. The next time you get impatient about the bike riders, think about that drive-through wait line. Let's also think about the fact that those drive-through wait lines are in various other places like banks and now there's all sorts of places that you can get food at a wait line because of the whole COVID thing that happened the last couple of years. So think about how much time you spend waiting, and what's 10 seconds for the person on the bicycle who's trying to transport themselves or is just riding their bike down the road. Not a big deal. It really isn't a big deal. And what's 10 seconds at a crosswalk? That's the one that infuriates me. People actually will run someone over in a crosswalk rather than slow down or stop. We'll get on to this in a minute. But anyway, and now for this. Now this. Remember, they say that
and
on that
now
show.
This.
And now this. More rant. Daylight savings time. What's with the changing of the times? Let's stop this, okay? Either go one way or go the other way, but let's just be done with it. Because being a morning person, I'm just not so sure, but forcing me to reset my biological clock every 6 months is really no help either. So
it's not every 6 months.
Whatever it is.
It's 4 months and then 9 months.
Okay, 4 months and then 9 months. But what it is that you just start getting used to where you're at, and then all of a sudden they swap it over. So, you know, I've been getting up early in the morning to teach my classes up at the community center, and you know, I've got to be fairly awake and alive and ready to go and, you know, pretty zippy because I am the instructor there. And I was just starting to settle into the fact that it was almost getting light as I was getting there, almost. And I'm starting to think about it and go, you know, if the weather keeps going in this direction. The other positive of that, too, is as the sun gets higher in the sky earlier in the day, it gets warmer earlier in the day. So, therefore, making my possible cycle commute a lot more comfortable if it's a little warmer in the morning. But no, 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 we have to reset back. It is dark as all get out this morning, and I gotta deal with the darkness and the cold. And it was, you know, it wasn't horribly cold this morning. I think we were at about 35 Fahrenheit here this morning, so not terrible, but still too cold for me to ride my bike. I'm just not ready for that yet. I'll get there. Once it starts cracking 40, I'll be okay.
You know, and then we're gaining minutes at a rate of 3 minutes a day.
I understand.
It's going to be very light.
But you know what?
Month.
We were gaining, like, on when I head off to class on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we were light when I left the house.
All right. Well, you will be in a few weeks.
Now I got to wait another hour. So it's another hour, 3 minutes, 3 into 60. How much is that? So how many days do I have to wait? And anyway, and then it'll be good. So, daylight savings.
20.
That's just a gripe.
That's
all.
That's the beginning of
so
April.
I have a little piece here that I'll get to. Is daylight savings time good for bicycling? Yeah, that's a good question. Really good question. More in the show. We'll get back to that. On the positive side, because we got to go both ways here, it's daylight savings time. So what does that mean? That means that at the end of the day, if you are a cyclist and you want to get out after you get home from work or whatever, you can go outside and you can ride your bike. And maybe it'll actually have gotten, maybe it's warm enough so that, you know, it's comfortable too at the same point. So we'll take a little negative and a little positive and we'll mix them together. And you tell me, do you like daylight savings time? Do you not like daylight savings time? Do you like the fact that we always change the clocks back and forth or not? What's your story? I'd love to hear it. You can comment down below or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. There's a lot of good things happening in Rhode Island. I'm going to get to that a little bit later on in the show. There's some good proposals for legislature, for some serious changes for cycling. And anyway, we'll get to it later in the show. I'll talk a little bit more about that. The classics are still going on. Oh my God. Good bike racing out there if you like bike racing. There's also really good NCAA college basketball right now too, but that's another story. And I know that's not related to cycling, but you know, we live here in the basketball capital of the world, or so proclaimed. And so therefore, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. Go Huskies. Anyway, that's it. That's what I got. Weather comes, weather goes. You know, we got March. March is great sometimes. It starts warming up. The days get longer. Back to that daylight savings time thing. And, you know, it all starts looking good. And tomorrow we have, or maybe later today, we have a nor'easter coming. Yay! It's a big scare. It looks like, you know, those nor'easters, you know, they can dump 2-3 feet of snow on you. You could really have a nasty one. We're going to get maybe 2-3 inches of snow. That's my call. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They're not even close. The weather is not going to be warm enough to give us the snow that they're talking about.
Or cold enough.
It's not going to be cold enough, right. So, and it's just going to turn over to rain. It's going to start out as rain. It's going to turn rain. Don't worry about it. Let's hope it just rains and then our roads will stay clear and clean and we won't have sand all over them, which is another problem that we have here.
It's going to be 50 degrees later in the
week. And on Wednesday, it'll be in the 50s. Yeah. So there we go. So it'll be back. It will be back. And of course, the Frozen Four Criterium series will continue, and hopefully they won't have, you know, sandy, snowy roads that they have to deal with. It's all going to go away. It all melts quick. That's the other beauty of March, is that the sun gets much higher in the sky, that even if we do get a pile of snow to drop down, a couple days later, it's pretty much goes away. It goes away really, really quickly, unless it's a, you know, 3-footer. We haven't had one of those in a while. I'm hoping, tapping on wood here, I'm hoping that we don't have any of those this year now. I'm done. I'm done with the winter thing. I'm ready for the summer thing. So anyway, mechanical minute and cycling tips. Speaking of the fact that we're all getting back out on our bikes again, and it's that time of year, and so we've been diligently looking over our bikes to make sure they're working okay, right? or we brought them to our local bike shop and we had them check it out for us before things really start to pop, right? We didn't do that yet. We should be doing that. But
can you check my bike?
The other thing, yeah, right. You can see how it gets done here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fran taps my shoulder and I have to go check her bike. But anyway.
I check your body.
not going there right now. So anyway, yeah. Okay. We'll get to that.
You check my bike, I check your body.
Right.
It works out.
And then I also recently had some blood work done, and you got to read over the blood work and see if I was, you know, going to still be here next year or not.
You gave me your March blood work from last year.
From last year. Oops. Big oops, but that's okay. A little few changes there, here and there. Oh, well. Just keep riding your bike, folks. That's all I can say. Just keep riding your bike. So anyway, the mechanical tip is it's time to recharge your lights and your computers
because,
you know, that's a thing. So I think that this is a good suggestion and you should consider setting yourself up really close to where all your bike stuff is. Let's say it's your pump is there, your floor pump pumping up the tires, and you've got your helmet there and your shoes there and all your things ready to go so that you can, you know, just roll out the door and go ride your bike. You should have a charging station there too. Charging stations can come in a variety of different ways, but we use one of those surge protector type things, and it has some USB ports on it. And we can plug in there. That's the way we do it. And it's always in the same spot. And when you get done with your ride, or if your light was starting to get weak, or you were out riding, your friend said, you know, your rear light's not working anymore, right?
Yes.
You get to plug it in when you get home, and then you have it fresh. And if you're like us, you maybe have one or two extra of the lights available. So you can kind of rotate them. So when one goes dim, then the other one can take over. I'm going to be converting myself over to one of these nifty little, camera/light mechanisms that hooks into your computer and, you know, lets you know when people are coming up on you really fast at night, day or night, doesn't really matter. But anyway, I've got one of those that's going to go on now. So I'll pay probably pretty close attention to keeping that charged all the time so that I can be safe when I'm out there, and I'm kind of anxious to see that. I haven't really played with it yet. I haven't used it. We should have probably taken it down to Florida when we went down to Florida, because, boy, there's a lot of crazy people in cars down there. But I haven't had a chance to really play around with it yet. I have friends who have them. They swear by them. I saw a lot of them when I was doing the follow vehicle for our Farm to Fork Fondos this past summer. And it's amazing because as a following vehicle, you get way, way behind, and then you have to come up really quickly sometimes, and you can just, all the lights just like start flashing super fast, and it's cool. It's kind of cool. It's a neat thing. But anyway, doesn't work unless the battery's charged. So set yourself up with the charging station so you have that right there available right next to all your other pieces of valuable equipment that you're going to use when you are getting ready to ride your bike, and then it'll all be charged before you actually have to leave. So that's a good thing. That's my tip for the week. Why did you give me a battery, Fran?
Because it was on my chair.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't know what that battery is, where it came from, whether it's alive or dead, but anyway, there it is. So you can get just another thing to, I did a little search this morning to see what else was available out there because, you know, we're kind of set the way we are right now, but you can get USB wall chargers with 10 ports of USB outlets on them. And they'll have like rapid charge technology and all that, and they don't take up a whole lot of space. So if you've got a place to do that, that's great. It's not a bad idea. I saw someone had a suggestion online. They put everything into a drawer. I wouldn't do that just because battery inside a drawer, I worry about fires and things like that. I would try to put it on a surface that is not flammable. That's even better if you can do that. But anyway, get yourself one of those if you don't have it already, and then you can keep everything all neat and organized, and all your little wires and cables are right there, and you're not constantly looking for them to see where my micro USB, now USC, whatever. They are all changing around all the time. Lightning cables. I wish there was just one standard. I thought I read something that England was going to go to USB-C only. That's it. You can't do it. You can't manufacture or sell anything in the country anymore with any other types of cables because everyone has drawers full of cables. And it's just a big waste of money. And it's, you know, it's not environmentally good either. But anyway, that would be my tip of the week. Set yourself up at the charging station. It's a nice way to go. So we got a few things here I wanted to go over, but first of all, I want to go back to where I was here for the state of Rhode Island, who that's our neighbor right over here. They're over that way. So you don't know what that way is. They're to the east of us. So we are in the eastern part of Connecticut. We are about 25 miles from the Rhode Island line. And I brought this up because Famous Amos had posted something. Yeah, you know who you are if you're Famous Amos. If you're from Rhode Island, you know who Famous Amos is. Anyway, Shout out to Brumble Bikes down in Westerly, Rhode Island. And that's a different Amos. Oh. And just a big shout out. He posts a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. He also posts a lot of stuff on Facebook.
I bet he makes cookies.
And he probably does make cookies, but that's not what he's famous for. Not really what he's famous for. I would say that Amos is famous for being just an all-around good bike guy who has been supporting cycling and supporting himself by being in the bicycle industry for a long time. He does. But he also makes serious ones, of which this one came out. And so when it did, I decided that I would look and see what it's all about. Well, the state of Rhode Island in the General Assembly listed in their January session, this is Bill H5577 is an act relating to motor and other vehicles, Operation of Bicycles, Highway Safety Act. And it was introduced by Representative Kieslak, Potter, and Handy. And it was introduced on February 15th. So, what is it all about? Well, it's all about bicycles. It's a good thing. A signal of intention to turn right or left when required shall be given continuously during not less than the last 100 feet traveled by the bicycle before turning. How about that? You know, they want to make it so that, you know, you actually point to where you're going so you can let people know where you're going. What a great idea. And shall be given while bicycle is stopped waiting for a turn. A single by hand and arm need not be given continuously if the hand is needed in control or operation of the bike. There you go. That makes sense, doesn't it? Okay, and then there's a section here that says a person operating a bicycle approaching a stop sign shall slow down and if required, for safety, stop before entering the intersection. After slowing to a reasonable speed or stopping, the person shall yield the right of way to any vehicle in the intersection or approaching on another highway so closely as to constitute an immediate hazard during the time the person is moving across or within the intersection or junction of highways. After slowing to a reasonable speed, yielding the right of way if required, the person on the bicycle may cautiously make a turn and proceed through the intersection without stopping. Hello, what does that sound like, Fran?
Yeah.
Come on, what does it sound like? The Idaho stop.
The Idaho Stop.
Right. Yeah. Right. Sounds like they're pushing through the Idaho Stop in Rhode Island. Yay.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but good
not
thing.
In Connecticut.
But, well, you know, I'll talk about that. Maybe the rest of New England should catch up to what's going on in Rhode Island right now. Funny how the littlest state in all of New England is doing the biggest things. I actually made a post this morning to that effect saying, isn't it funny how the smallest state is making the biggest move forward? So you know, it has a lot of this legislature and wording here that has to do with people on bicycles proceeding through lights and stop signs with caution and safety and not being forced to stop for that. Kind of like a lot of cars do. We won't get into that. That's another story. But anyway, the idea here is that when you're riding a bicycle, when you slow down or when you have to come to a stop, then you have to accelerate again. And, you know, we of just 1/4 horsepower just don't have all that power to be doing that all the time. So if we have an opportunity, just roll through a stop sign because it's completely safe and really easy to do. It's a good thing. It's really actually a very, very good thing. It's also kind of cool because if you're using your bike as a commuter, you're actually going to gain some time at the intersections versus the motorized vehicles who will be required to stop. So kind of a cool thing. Thought it was great. There's another piece here. A person riding a bicycle should comply with the following. Both the approach for a right turn shall be made as close as practical to the right-hand curb or edge of the roadway. Yeah. So the part of this language I like is the as close as practicable. You know, if you're really tight against the edge of the road, it just gives a perception to the motorized vehicle driver that they've got room to go around you. And if you're going through a turn, it really shouldn't have room to go around you. You should be out in the lane. That's my feeling. It is also a feeling of the League of American Bicyclists. They also support this idea too. I think that you have to be a little careful about how close to the edge of the road you get in certain situations. Once again, with time and practice, the more you get out there, the more you play in traffic, so to speak, I'm going to say that very loosely, you will get a much better feel for what is safe for everyone. And you'll also get a much better feel for how you can communicate properly with motorized vehicles when you're riding with motorized vehicles. It's not that hard. Let's see, what else here? When intending to turn left, the person on the bicycle shall approach the turn in the extreme left-hand lane lawfully available to traffic moving in the direction of travel. Sounds kind of like a no-brainer, I understand. But how many times have I seen people on bicycles that are trying to make a left-hand turn and they're all the way over to the right side of the road on the curb because they think that that's where they're supposed to be? This is going to obviously require some education on all ends. We're going to get to that with Rhode Island very shortly. So whenever practical, the left-hand turn shall be made in the left of the center, the intersection to leave the intersection or other location on the extreme left-hand lane lawfully available to traffic moving in the same direction of the highway being entered. So pretty simple stuff, pretty basic, but, you know, just trying to get these points across. My real question is going to be, and we'll see, and there were some comments on this too, is how are they going to educate the driver of the motorized vehicle that these are now laws that need to be paid attention to? That would be a certain interesting question, and I'd love to hear an answer on that. So it says here, where a special lane for making left turns by drivers proceeding by opposite directions has been indicated by traffic control devices. What does that mean? You go over to the left lane, you can get into that left lane, that left-hand turn lane, that you are legally bound to do that. Now, If you go all the way over to the very left of that left lane, what is that going to do for you? Well, it's going to make that vehicle behind you crowd you. Get in the middle of the lane. Just get in the middle lane, just like you would if you were in a motorized vehicle. Once again, if you want to ride in traffic, you need to become traffic. So you need to be able to visually make it look like, you know, I'm a car now. I'm a truck now. This is who I am when I'm on my bike, when I'm in traffic. When you're in that center lane, they can't go to the right or to the left of you. They can only be behind you. When the light turns, you all go forward. You can pull over to the side as soon as you get yourself safely through the intersection. This is not a difficult thing. There is a clause here. It says a person operating a bicycle shall not ride in the lane except when preparing and or making the left turn from or into the traffic or when preparing to make a U-turn when otherwise permitted by law. So there it is. You're getting ready to make your turn. Get out in the middle of the road. Make the traffic slow down behind you. They're not going to be able to go through the intersection any faster than you are on a bicycle. So it really doesn't matter. And then a signal of intention to turn right or left shall be given during not less than 100 feet. We talked about that earlier. You use your hand or arm. And once again, thing with the whole, but unless you're, you know, losing control of your bicycle for some reason. So that's really good. So yielding to a person on a bicycle at crossings and intersections. No driver of motor vehicle shall pass any other motor vehicle which has stopped at a bicycle crossing to permit a person on a bicycle to cross. Oh boy, I've seen this one. I almost got hit on one of these once. Nor shall such operator enter a marked bicycle crossing while a person on a bicycle is crossing or until there is sufficient space beyond the bicycle crossing to accommodate the motor vehicle the person is operating, notwithstanding that a traffic control signal may indicate that vehicles may proceed. So I have a situation which I can relate on this one. We were up in Vernon, I believe, and we were on the Hop River Trail, and we were crossing an intersection, and it looked pretty good. A car had stopped in one direction to let us go. And so we proceeded to cross, and a car came up and over a rise in the other direction and was not planning on stopping at all. Even though there was a crosswalk there, even though there was a car from the opposite direction stopped, they lost control of their vehicle. They almost hit that vehicle. They almost hit us. It was just wacky, you know, and that's where this particular idea comes in. If someone has stopped, if a motor vehicle has stopped at a crosswalk, that is going to allow cyclists to cross a busy road on a bike trail, then the other motorist needs to stop too. Seems, once again, kind of like a no-brainer, but, you know, there it is. That's what we got. Let's see. When traffic control signals are not in place or not in operation, the driver of a motor vehicle shall yield the right of way, slowing down or stopping if need be, to yield a person on a bicycle crossing a roadway or intersection at a bicycle crossing marked, signed, or otherwise. Wow. Look at that. Bicycle has the right of way. Interesting. Similar to the pedestrian having the right of way, and we know how well that works. So, you know, they're basically trying to define a little bit more direction to accommodating cycling. Some of these are good things. Some of these are gray. What I want to see is the Department of Transportation over in Rhode Island, or the Department of Motor Vehicles more so. I want to see some sort of an education process that will come out to let people know about these changes, should these changes get approved and go forward. I believe they probably will. I don't think there's going to be much disagreement to this. It all kind of seems like things that are already happening. But anyway... any driver of a vehicle convicted of violating the provisions of this section shall be subject to the fines And the same amount for violations, and it's got some code as far as that goes. I don't know what those are. Speed limits in thickly settled areas and business districts. This is my favorite one. I like this a lot. Well, it's not my favorite, but it's one of them that's way up there. On a state highway, inside a thickly settled or business district located in a city or town, the department shall establish and post a speed limit of 25 miles per hour, or a speed limit based on an engineering speed study. I don't like that part of that language. In compliance with Chapter 13 of Title 31, the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. What does this mean? It means something that I've been complaining about for a long time. If there are crosswalks in a heavily populated area, if there is bicycle and pedestrian activity there, the speed has to be 25 miles an hour. Or less. If you want to go less, that's fine. But no more than 25 miles per hour. And the beauty of that is, for whatever it can be, when a cyclist is hit at that speed or a pedestrian is hit at that speed, they have a 90% chance of coming through that alive. If they're hit at 40, they're gone. They're gone. They have a 90% chance of dying from the impact. So it's not a big difference. It's only 20 miles an hour, but that 20 miles an hour, 15, 20 miles an hour is deadly. It's totally deadly, especially with today's devices that people are driving around in. Notice how I called a vehicle a device, because they're using their devices when they're in their cars, and then they're driving their devices because they're all hooked up to them, and nobody's paying attention to what they're doing, and we have a tragedy going on right now as far as pedestrian and cyclist deaths go. So I'm here to make lots of noise. I hope if you are here listening, you will go out and make lots of noise too, because that's how we get these things done. That's how we get noticed. So it's super important that we keep our sights on this. Don Rogers, did you see the new crossing signals in Vernon? No, I have not, Don. What's that all about? So
they wrote him to ask him to.
Yeah, let me know what we're talking about there. That's cool. I know that the trails up in Manchester Vernon area, we're putting in handicap compatible crossing areas. So instead of having those stupid bars that go all the way across the trail, and then you've got this like little skinny place to get around to get back out on the road, they actually put in ones that are compatible with wheelchair access, which is really cool because it's easier to ride your bike through there and it's way safer. And you also have the capability of getting through with a bike trailer attached to the back of your bike. And those are ADA, is that the correct way of putting this? ADA compatible barriers.
Act.
Yep, those are ADA compatible. So they're wide enough to get a wheelchair through. They're wide enough to get a bike trailer through. They're not wide enough to get a quad through. That's a beautiful thing, because that's where the problems occur on some of the bike trails. We have all this overuse of motorized quad vehicles, and they're not supposed to be there. They're just not supposed to be there. And they're kind of young and stupid and adamant about it. But anyway, they cause some trouble. So for the purposes of the section, thickly settled shall be defined as any area where buildings are fewer than 200 feet apart for the distance of 1/8 of a mile or more.
I thought you could only use thickly settled in Massachusetts. That's the only state I've ever seen that sign.
I can't hear you, friend. You need to get a lot closer to the microphone. Thanks.
I said I thought thickly settled was a Massachusetts thing. That's the only state I've ever seen that in. And when I know I'm riding my bike in Massachusetts when I see that sign.
Yeah,
never seen
thickly
it in,
settled.
In,
well, maybe in Rhode Island too. Who knows? But anyway, that's the purpose, is thickly settled, is obviously there are buildings next to one another and there are, you know, crosswalks, etc. Violations are subject to the same fines as the others. So reckless driver accountability traffic safety program. Let's see here. There is hereby established a reckless driver accountability traffic safety program. The program shall feature classes based on a restorative justice model to educate reckless drivers on the impacts of their actions. So you're a reckless driver, you go back to school to learn how to drive. That's good. It's required. Hopefully, you will then, at the end of completing the course, be given back your license. It's not really the way it works, but it's the way I'd like to see it. The program shall be open to the public. The state may charge reasonable fees to pay for administration of the Reckless Driver Accountability Program. Motor vehicles with five or more automated traffic enforcement. What? For speeding violation? Oh, five speeding violations or three or more speeding violations for driving 21 miles per hour or more over the speed limit shall be subject to, page four, impoundment. Yeah, 25 miles and over, or 21 miles over the speed limit and you get your car taken away? Ha! How about that? So that is considered reckless drivers and they will take your car away. And they'll take your car away, it looks like, for 10 days after notification of the last violation. And they have to complete the class within 90 days of the last violation. Any vehicle impounded pursuant to this section shall not be released until the vehicle owner completes the Reckless Driver Accountability Program and pays all the applicable towing and storage fees. Ouch! That's a biggie. Wouldn't you think that would make people drive a little more carefully? I like this, and you know what? If you got a camera, that's another thing that's at your charging station, by the way. If you got a camera on your bike and you can get evidence of this sort of activity, it helps a lot when it comes down to the time to explain to a police officer why, you know, you're having a problem with a particular vehicle. So this is important stuff. And I know, you know, there's a lot of talk about, well, Big Brother watching. We've got cameras at traffic lights and all these things. And now they're talking about having speeding cameras put up. I used to not like that idea. I used to feel really uncomfortable about the fact that, you know, I couldn't really do anything freely in my motorized vehicle without having to worry about getting a ticket for it. But now I'm starting to see it from a different light. I see it from the light of trying to keep other people who are using the highways, like cyclists or pedestrians, safe. So I'm starting to think that maybe it's not such a bad idea. I'm sure it'll turn into a Supreme Court issue at some time because things like this do that. But anyway, That's a good thing. They take your car away if you do something stupid. I like that idea. Take your license away, take your car away. You know, you can take the person's license away, and they're just going to get in another car, or they're going to just get in the car without the license. But when you take the car away, it's a lot harder to get back in the car. So it definitely makes a lot of sense. Okay, last thing on the list, and probably the most important of it all, is there is going to be a curriculum for highway safety. The Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall develop and make available to public schools and public charter schools in Rhode Island an educational curriculum for children in kindergarten through grade 12. Oh, thank God. Through grade 12 regarding the safe use of public streets and premises open to the public by pedestrians and bicyclists. 12 years. All it takes, it's a 12-step program, so to speak, right? Every year, you learn a little bit more about what you should and should not be doing on the road as a pedestrian or as a cyclist. What does that do to making mom and dad drive safer down the road? I'm going to tell you right now, if you have a child that has a brain and they keep hearing this in school and you have a communication set up with this child where you talk about, hey, what did you learn in school today? That sort of thing. They're going to tell you all about how, well, you know, what we learned is that when you get to certain areas where it's congested, and there's lots of crosswalks and buildings and all, you have to slow down to 25 miles an hour. And mom and dad are going to go, oh, no, you don't. Oh, yes, you do. It's the law. It's a new law. Those kids will repeat this over and over and over again. And as they do, and as they become defiant teenagers or outspoken, I know it all teenagers, they're going to get real vocal about it. And they're going to be passing that information on to their parents, to people who are operating motorized vehicles. I think this is great. Starting from kindergarten in Rhode Island. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Big, big thumbs up on this one. Big tip of the cycling cap, however you want to do it. This, at a minimum, the curriculum shall address the safe use of bicycles. Number two, traffic laws, regulations, and best practices included but not limited to the use of far hand reach when exiting a motor vehicle known as the Dutch Reach. Oh, I can't believe they can do that. Can they really do that? Well, they're going to educate about the Dutch Reach. If you don't know what the Dutch Reach is, by the way, it's reaching over before you to, if you're a driver of a vehicle and you're getting ready to open your door, instead of opening your door with your left hand, as we normally would do, you reach over and open it with your right hand. What does that do? It forces you to look in your side view mirror and see the cyclist, which you're about to open the door to and door them. So interesting that they're going to try to implement the Dutch Reach. Very, very interesting. That's going to be really hard to enforce, but you know what? If you door someone, you obviously didn't do it, so maybe that's where the enforcement comes in. The use of bicycle lanes and trails and safe pedestrian practices. Yay. So, hey, Rhode Island, thank you. Welcome to the 80s. I didn't say that, did I? I know we're in the 2000s now. I understand, but this stuff should have been done years and years and years ago. I'm just making a point, which is a comment, and it's really, really nice to see that at least they're moving forward and that they will become a safer place to ride your bike. Because I can tell you right now, there's a very very strong presence of bicycles due to the fact in Rhode Island, especially around that Providence Warwick area, due to the fact that they put in bike trails long before anybody else had put in bike trails. I think that the first, like the Bay Path Trail that went in on the other side of the bay, on the east side of the bay in Rhode Island, I think that went in shortly after the Cape Cod trails went in, out in Cape Cod. So they've been there for a real long time. They're a little underbuilt and overpopulated for my liking, but they're there, and a lot of people use them because it's very flat, and it's along the bay, and it's beautiful, and you can ride basically from Providence all the way down to the, what is it, what bridge is it that goes over to Middletown, Rhode Island, Fran? You know the name of that bridge, don't you?
The Jamestown Bridge?
Not the Jamestown. Oh. No, it's the other bridge. It's on the north. It's on the north side, Mount Hope. Yes, that's it.
That's not Jamestown. That's
No, over to Middletown, Rhode Island. Right. It might be even called the Portsmouth Bridge.
It's Mount Hope Bridge, but yeah. Are you sure it goes to Middletown? Because I know it.
Yeah, because you can go to Newport. Once you cross it, you go to Newport. You're right there. You're on the island. So anyway.
That's a different bridge then.
That's a different bridge. Okay. But there it is. And it ends in Bristol, Rhode Island. It starts in Bristol, Rhode Island, right down by Bay Path College.
That's Portsmouth. I used to go there with Rob.
He lived
in Portsmouth.
Right, right. Okay. There's a bridge there that goes over to the island because you can't get there other than swim.
That's right.
So, or
it's
boat.
It doesn't go to Middletown. But, it goes to Portsmouth.
Which is right next to Middletown,
which
is right next to Newport. That's
the Island. The top of it is Portsmouth. Right. The middle of it is Middletown.
Right, exactly.
And the bottom of it is Newport.
Exactly.
Okay.
Fine. Got that. Anyway. Okay. So, yay, big shout out to Rhode Island. Good job, you guys. Great work. Hope to hear more about this. And here's a fun one. Speaking of, since we're talking so much about Cars and stupid people and all. A Lexus driver struck a bicyclist on the Pacific Coast Highway. This is in California, in Dana Point. And this was back in February, and got out after hitting the cyclist, got out and stabbed the cyclist. The driver was held by Good Samaritans until officers arrived. So the people that witnessed it after the driver got out and stabbed this guy who was on his bike, they held him down, and so he could not get away, so that he could then continue his crazy ranting and murderous activity. Why do I say murderous activity? Because unfortunately that cyclist died in the hospital. They were rushed away later and was later pronounced dead. Now, just so you know a little bit more about that cyclist, he was identified as Michael McMamone, 58-year-old local emergency room physician. This guy was riding his bike to work. He was riding his bike to work, and he's an emergency room physician, and some idiot in a massive piece of garbage motorized vehicle decided to hit him and then get out and stab him and kill him. What in the world is wrong with people? Magnesium, right? Is that what it is?
Oh, I could make a case for magnesium and a host of problems.
More magnesium. We need more magnesium. Calm people down.
I can take you from magnesium to war, and I can take you from magnesium to world peace.
I know. Magnesium. So footage from the scene showed the victim's mangled mountain bike and the shattered windshield and front end damage with the Lexus. It was unclear if the cyclist and the driver knew each other or if it was a road rage incident. Providence Mission Hospital released a statement following the news of the death, which read, "We are stunned by this devastating tragedy. The entire Mission Hospital family is grieving for the loss of an incredible surgeon and this incredible physician and friend." Yay. Okay, in the senseless, that we can put that one in the senseless road rage department. Dumb, and dumber. Not good. So let's see, what else do we have here on the list? Okay, we were talking about daylight savings time earlier, right?
No.
Yeah, we were. Okay. Of course we were. Is daylight savings time good for bicycling?
Is it good for your health? Is it better?
Well, you know, I read something about that too, and apparently there's a real question about heart disease in daylight savings time.
Right, yeah.
And that one really kind of alarmed me. I don't have that information in front of me right now, but we could cover that at a later date. So anyway, for better or worse, making daylight savings time permanent has become a politically popular item right now. That may not be a bad thing, at least not for biking and walking. Popular Mechanics published an article last spring, "Daylight Savings Time is Actually a Good Thing," which challenges the notion that daylight savings time's benefits are only imaginary. It's thesis boils down to this: more of us go outside in the evening than in the morning, so giving us more daylight during that time helps us stay healthy and happy and safe.
Is that true?
The list of activities that decrease during daylight savings time months include decrease crime, traffic crashes, and watching TV. On the other hand, the outdoor industry benefits from it. Yeah, so that means, so daylight savings time is a good thing because it gets people out of their houses.
Right.
And it gets people out of maybe getting them out of their vehicles because they're working in the yard or they're, you know, just getting some fresh air or going for a walk or whatever. So it actually reduces crime. That's the one that hit on me, was that it reduces
there's less
crime.
Darkness at night.
There's less darkness at night, and people get out and they do positive things instead of negative things. So this article says, "I met numerous bike riders who avoid biking at night, but we all know how unsafe it can feel walking outside in the dark. If we had the power to give these people more sunlight, why shouldn't we do that?" So there it is. We got to stop changing the clocks around. So does daylight savings time help biking and walking? This person has no hard evidence, but only because they're not aware of anyone who's tried to measure it yet. However, the hypothesis is consistent with similar studies that have been seen with the possibility of permanent daylight savings time on our horizon. I believe that we would be remiss not to test this theory. So, yeah, there you go. It might just be safer. It might just reduce crime. You know, crime happens in the dark because no one can be seen doing it, right? So if we just make that a little later in the day, then not such a bad thing. My gripe and my rant about it is, don't, if you're going to go there, leave it there. Don't come back. Make it so that we all get used to it. And this is the way it is. And this is the way it will be for the future. This is also being discussed all over Europe right now, too, by the way. Just in case you wanted to know. We're not the only ones. But anyway, I thought that it was an interesting thing to bring up because it's daylight savings time. What is your feeling about daylight savings time? Do you enjoy it? Are you happy that it's happening? Does it work better into your schedule? Will it make you get out on your bicycle more? You know, let me hear. Let me hear what you have to say. Will it help with your commute back and forth to work if you have daylight savings time at the end of the day? That's another interesting piece of research I would love to see, and that would be... is it safer to commute on your bicycle in the morning or in the evening? Now, I'm going to say that in the evening, there is less patience on the commuter driver than there is in the morning. In the morning, they're impatient because they have to get to work on time, but they generally plan it better because they have to get to work on time. In the evening,
they just
want to get home. They're tired, they're impatient, and they just want to get home. And that stupid cyclist is in their way, and they just can't stand that because it's going to cost them 10 seconds of time in the Lazy Boy. Anyway, whatever. whatever. So as I was talking to someone recently, and I'm going to run out of time on this, and so I will explore this in the future, just so you know. There's all sorts of talk right now about electric cars and trucks. And I have been reading about this a lot. I've been studying it a lot because I'm interested. There's a lot of concern because of the lithium ion problem, in which case we just don't have enough of it, and we are not going to be able to make enough batteries to be able to power these vehicles, let alone the recharging infrastructure and all that. But right now we seem dead set on pushing forward the idea of making all of our vehicles into electric vehicles. What will it do for pollution in the United States? It'll make a huge difference. Our carbon output is like beyond compare. It's the worst in the world, really, per capita.
It's worse than China?
Because of cars. Yeah, China's not good. They're number two.
Okay.
They're number two, but we're number one. We're number one. USA. USA. We're number one.
Nice.
We're the number one polluter because of that. Now, we're also really focused a lot more than China is on resolving the problem, but we're still... The reason is single occupancy motorized vehicles, period. That's it. That's where the problem is. If we would put six people in a car, then we could dramatically reduce this. But instead, the automobile industry and the energy industry is more decidedly going towards, let's keep everybody in their individual vehicle and continue to put more vehicles on the road, but do it without polluting. So therefore, electric vehicles come along. Someone looked at me the other day, maybe it was Fran, said, who can afford that thing?
Matter of fact,
I think we saw about a $45,000 or $50,000 one of those things parked in the co-op parking lot the other day.
I think it's a crime how expensive they are.
And they're wicked expensive. So... let's go on to, and again, I'm going to have to come back to this because we're going to run out of time. So next week, we're going to explore why a family cargo bike is the best purchase you can make this year. All right? something to think about. It's a great idea. There's a lot of varieties out there. I'll do even more research on it now that I have this time to do it, and we'll talk more about it next week. If you are using a family cargo bike right now to transport your kids back and forth to school, to go grocery shopping, to run your errands about town, whatever it may be, write me. Drop me a little note over here at Bicycle Talk, the1@gmail.com, or right here on the Facebook page. I'd love to hear about your experience with your family cargo bike. Cool stuff. It's really, really cool stuff. So anyway, we will explore that next week. We're gonna move on to finishing things off though, because we gotta get to the end of the story here. Tadej Pogačar. Yeah, the Paris-Nice. Wow, good stuff. Don't know if you saw it. You might want to check it out. Pretty cool stuff. Anyway, it was an 8-stage race. It was exciting, and Pogačar's on. He looks real, real good. So we're going to be seeing a lot more from him when it comes to Tour de France time. And we're going to see a lot more from a lot of the big classic riders. There's just some crazy stuff. Wout van Aert just won a race last weekend. There's some cool stuff coming down the racing highway, so to speak. Anyway, let's see. After that, we got to go to our events. We moving on up here. You can meet your old pal here, Pedal and Ron, and others from the Domestique Events production at the Pedal Power in Willimantic, Connecticut on the 25th of March from 4 p.m. until they close. And it's a pre-event celebration of the Natchog Epic Gravel Ride. There will be some interesting people there. Chris Britz will be there. He'll explain all about his big bike trek. It's fascinating. He's got a great story to tell. Come on by, check it out, join the party. It'll be a fun time. And I think we're going to have a sign up on Bike Reg, but I did check it this morning and did not see it because there is limited space, just so you know. Following day will be the Natchog Epic. There are well over 600 people entered in this 850 max event right now. It's coming up real soon. That is on the 26th, and it is in Thompson, Connecticut. And I will be there for that too, with my friend Richard Fries, who is the director of that event. The Taipei Show starts on March 25th and goes all the way to April 7th if you're going to go the digital route on that one. Lots of new things will be presented there. Lots of cool things to explore. Can't wait. The Hop River Mountain Bike Race on April 15th is coming up. It's the first of the CCAP Mountain Bike Series. The International Ride of Silence is on May 17th and will start off at the Mansfield Community Center at 10 South Eagle Road in Storrs, Connecticut. Kevin and I will be there to greet you and lead you through a very, very quiet 3.5-mile ride, escorted by the University of Connecticut Police Department. Let's see, what else do I have? Don't forget about, there's also the 23rd Annual National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C. There is an online option there, too. You can go to the League of American Bicyclists and find out more about that. Finishing points, don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. The Natchog Epic is coming up at the end of March. Come see me live at Pedal Power on the 25th. So it's going to be just a great weekend. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. You got to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join that revolution of change. Remember, when you're presenting to your local officials, come there with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Please support your local bike shop. It's 2023. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, tell everyone you know, and finally, take on the Pedal and Ron Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it one day and just use your bicycle. You may surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs, and WHUS.org. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Thank you so much for listening. This is 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Take care and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Thank you so much for listening. This is 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Take care. I want to ride my bicycle.